side of the gene vault. Super-chilled gas vented from the sides, dispersing rapidly into the sparse air. The sides opened, spilling billowing white out into the near vacuum. Inside should have been racks to carry armored gene seed flasks, the most precious resource of any Space Marine chapter. They had been removed, and a cramped methylon casket rigged in their place. Liquid, close to absolute zero, kept the occupant in a state of suspended animation. The suspension chamber in such devices was usually a rigid container of some sort. Lack of space had forced Aratus and Sebastian to make the unit from a resistant plastic sack. The material was opaque, but the thing inside was roughly humanoid, presenting the outline of a bulbous head and a body curled into a fetal position. Three arms wrapped around a hunched torso. Its legs were sharply defined against the pliable material. Aratus went to a control panel bolted into the innards of the machine. The gene vault had been carefully cut to take several cylinders of various fluids. Tubes led from the cylinders into the sack via tight seals. Everything was covered in a thick layer of frost. "Shall I commence the reanimation cycle, my lord?" said Aratus. "This is the last chance we have to abandon this course of action."
"Do it," said Thracian. "This is the end of us. Our death approaches."
"As you command," said Aratus. "Initiating reanimation cycle." Aratus keyed in a code on a grid of featureless green buttons. He depressed the final cipher in the code, and the machine set to work. The temperature of the hibernating occupant was raised rapidly. Cryoprotectants in the fluids that replaced its blood prevented ice crystals forming and destroying its cellular walls. When the cryptoprotectants were sufficiently fluid, they were pumped out and warmed blood pumped in. Aratus monitored the process. The three Terminators faced outwards on watch. The rest of the brothers observed in silence. The sack and cylinders, being warmed by the machine, steamed with the sublimation of ices. Inside pressurized glassite, liquids bubbled. "Vitae replacement complete," said Aratus. "Beginning cardiovascular restart." A small screen blinked on, displaying flat lines and readings all at zero. Lights flickered on the console. With a keystroke, Aratus sent a jolt of power into the sack's occupant. It spasmed. Some of the lines bumped, then went flat.
"Again," said Thracian.
Once more, Aratus sent a jolt into the being. Its limbs spasmed together. The lines spiked, settled back to flatness, then twitched into peaks and troughs. Heartbeat. Breathing. Finally, brain activity. The head turned outwards. Heavy brows pressed against the plastic, then a handless arm, the stump cap pushing out.
"Free it," said Thracian.
Aratus took out his combat knife, spun it round in his hand so he was holding it hilt up, and sliced quickly down. The occupant spilled out trailing wires and tubes. Some small fraction of it was human. That was evident in the eyes. Though yellow and deeply set, they had a human's quick intelligence. The rest of it was entirely alien. Three arms, a swollen head of off-white hue, plates of chitin and pronounced exoskeletal cage around a torso of ivory. Towards the extremities, its coloration approached that of a Sotharan human, a warm olive, but only just. A vestigial tail of bare human bone snapped back and forth at the bottom of its back. The scythes of the Emperor had mutilated the creature. A muzzle covered its mouth, immovable, bolted through flesh to bone. A heavy collar sat on its neck. All three of its hands had been amputated, and the talons on its toes clipped to the quick. It stared at them with hatred that, in its purity and ferocity, was human too. Thracian had no pity for this creature. It was a tyrannic being, a hybrid fathered by vanguard organisms to spread unrest and bring down civilizations before the high fleets arrived to feast. The fact that it was part human only made Thracian hate it more. It was the weakness of the Terran race incarnate. It was the symbol of the chapter's shame. He stared into its eyes. Under its muzzle mask, a fanged maw hissed. It leapt at him, the stumps of its arms held out to strike. Aratus tapped a box attached to his belt. The creature fell down mid-leap and landed hard on the floor, where it squirmed in agony. Its limbs pounded the glassy rock. It arched its back and squealed.
"Enough,"
said Thracian. Aratus tapped the box again. The creature curled up on itself. Keltru stepped forwards and snapped a heavy chain to a ring welded to the back of its collar and dragged it to its feet. Thracian stared at the hybrid, its eyes locked with his. Even with the null field, he could feel its psychic influence, a calming aura that urged him to trust it. The soothing effect it had on him fired his anger. This was the most insidious trick of this particular brood, psychic subversion to cow those who would discover them, strong enough to dull a space marine's wits.
"Turn on its vox beads," Thracian said.
Aratus did so. The chapter master crouched low so he might stare into its eyes directly. It wrinkled its nose beneath its mask at its own reflection. It knew on some level what it was, Thracian was certain.
"When Hadrios first showed me you, days after the fall of Sotha, he said one day you would help me find the source of corruption that had undone our world and our chapter. Everything else Hadrios said was a lie, but by the Emperor, I shall have that one truth out of him. Abomination, redeem yourself," said Thracian. "Take us to your father."
Chapter 18. Primary Location Beta. Necron drones formed a wall of seething metal. They burrowed through the ancient ferrocrete with incredible speed, mandibles flashing with molecular deconstruction beams. They whirled about in complicated patterns, a living drill head, wings thrumming, those that had their fill of matter flying away to the edges of the tunnel where they labored anew to lay down fresh layers of blackstone. Cracks, barely glimpsed as the rockcrete was stripped away, were filled. Pitted surfaces were brought to a lustrous sheen. When excavated, the tunnel's walls played with distant foxfires deep within the rock. Felix's group proceeded out of the Hall of the Founder, or Primary Location Alpha, as Call now referred to it, at a steady walking pace. In the vacuum there was no sound, but their voxnet was alive with small noises as thick and varied as a jungle soundscape. The scarabs gave off a rattling noise. The miniature gauss beams hissed, crackling out an occasional burst of electromagnetic violence as a large lump of false stone was rendered into energy and absorbed. Otherwise, the disturbing quiet of the vacuum blanketed them, accentuating the eeriness of the drones. There were many lesser tunnels branching from the main, and a crevasse running along the floor also plugged with ferrocrete. Subswarms of scarabs repeatedly attempted to peel away to attend to these, but Call's subversion routines pulsed loud enough that Felix's vox beads thumped with their signals, and the scarabs flew back to the main mass. Felix leaned aside as two groups of a dozen each rushed by his head, the emissions of their Xenos motive units tripping alarms in his battleplate. Call's servo skulls bobbed behind them like single-minded herding dogs, but Call himself was dangerously relaxed. There was a kinship between this many-legged ex-human and the alien machines he had enslaved. It was not right.
"Do not worry, Decimus," said Call. "They are completely under my command. They will not harm you." "They want to break free," said Felix.
"Their basic drives are strong. They wish to repair all of the Pharos. Indeed, as we go lower, I expect this little co-opted colony of ours will become unnecessary. The lower tunnels will have been cleared already by their fellows. There will be many thousands, if not millions, of the scarabs at work in the depths of the mountain. Their basest instincts are to repair and reproduce. They're marvelous things. In terms you might understand, they render matter down into raw energy and use it to construct whatever they wish. If they're left to their own devices, they will reproduce exponentially. One of my colleagues told me of a world that had been entirely disassembled by them, replaced with a ball of endlessly recycling scarabs. Gravity worked against them. It ever will attempt to make planets from sufficient mass, but the scarabs fought." He smiled. "I would dearly love to see it. Amazing. Imagine that power under our control. We have so much to learn from the Necrons, Decimus. So much."
He tapped a metal finger against his temple.
"Blasphemy, I know, but that does not mean it isn't true, as I like to say."
"How can you control them? Not once have I heard of a tech priest managing to break into the Necron carrier signal."
Call sighed with contentment at his mastery over the scarabs.
"This is me, Decimus. You know I can do many things. The tuning stage of Primary Location Alpha gives access to much more than the old Mechanicum believed. It is a primary interface with the mechanisms of the mountain, and although it has yet to reattain full functionality, it does allow one to control these drones, if one has the appropriate knowledge. That I do, having gained certain information from one of their technicians, though how I did so I shall keep to myself. It would shock you. He winked, a gesture Felix found entirely inappropriate.
Your lack of seriousness is a failing, Felix said. You will make a mistake.
I will not, said Call. Besides, I wear this personality for you, Decimus. It is the one you respond best to. Your psychological profile cannot lie.
You don't know everything, Call, said Felix. Your profile is wrong.
Is it now? Said Call.
Felix hated that turn of phrase. The way Call used it, in a lofty, superior sort of way, he hated even more.
For example, I know you are annoyed with me, Decimus, Call said conversationally.
I am angry with you, not annoyed, said Felix stoically. You are infuriating and irresponsible. You hide the truth from me for the purposes of drama. You are unstable, aggravating, arrogant, and dangerous.
Will that be your report to Rabute?
That will be the start of it, and the general flavor. There will be details, lots of them. The Lord Regent likes detail.
Doesn't he just? Said Call. Ah, well, I should not mock him for it. What are the statistics and information he craves, if not data? And what is data, if not knowledge, in its rawest form? I annoy him like I annoy you, dear Decimus, but he and I are not so different.
Your request to be Fabricator General of Mars irritate him, said Felix, and reveal the depths of your ambition.
At that, Call's weird locomotion ceased, and he turned about suddenly to look at Felix. The drone's smooth working hiccuped, and Call had to bring them back under control. When he had, his voice was concerned.
I have done no such thing, said Call.
Your machine, the Call Inferior, it keeps asking him, with every message, said Felix.
The scarabs continued their excavation, drawing away from the humans.
Really? That is interesting. I will have to do something about that.
Do not pretend you do not know. This repeated request irritates the Lord Gilliman more than anything. He says you know you cannot be made the leader of the Martian cult, not without risking civil war.
Of course I can't be Fabricator General, said Call.
He set off again, his feet tip-tapping on the glossy floor.
Half the Mechanicus think me the Anti-Maker cloaked in metal and flesh.
He swayed in close to deliver a loud stage whisper to Felix.
I do research, you know. There are some that call me scientist.
He laughed.
There would be immediate and devastating violence across all the Forge Worlds if I raised so much as a meaningful eyebrow in the direction of the Fabricator General's Forge. We would suffer a replay of the heresy itself. Though I do admit that it makes me sound a little full of myself, it is true.
Then why do you keep requesting it be done?
Call smiled.
Here's the funny thing, Decimus. I don't. I have no wish to be Fabricator General. Absolutely none whatsoever. It is a political role. I am not a politician. I am a genius. I do not crave power. I have no desire to rule. Rulership comes with many responsibilities. Responsibilities are fetters, and genius should never, ever be fettered. Do you really believe that is my heart's desire?
He chuckled and shook his head.
No, no, no.
Felix looked at his creator.
Then what is it you do want?
I want what you want, Decimus. I've told you repeatedly. How many more times must I say? Said Call. I want to save humanity from chaos and all the other great evils of this universe. I dream one day of slaying the great demon of ignorance and setting mankind free from darkness. I want what your gene father wants, even if we don't always see eye to eye on how it should be done. It pains me that others must suffer.
He became serious.
Would you believe that it pains me what I did to you? If I could, I would never have turned any of you boys into space marines. You would have stayed at home and lived out your lives. But the machina opus of the machine god is polluted. The great work of the universe does not run as it should. It must be set right, so that men might live in peace. And I can do it, Felix. I see how to do it. I can see how to banish chaos, how to meet the threat of the Necrons, how to convince the Eldari to cease their manipulations. But I need your help, Decimus. I need so much help. I cannot do it all alone.
Felix's temper remained sharp.
Then why must you infuriate me so? You do it on purpose.
I do, Call admitted.
Why?
I annoy you.
Yes. Enrage, frustrate, upset, and goad you. Every time I see you. How does that make you feel?
More determined to get out from under your shadow than you can know, said Felix.
Well then, said Call,
his smile showing coyly around his augmetic mask.
I think we can say that you're not afraid of me. Are you frightened of me, Decimus?
Legs rattling, Call pulled ahead, humming an ancient air that brought Felix cold chills of recognition. Annoyingly, Call was right. Felix wasn't afraid of him. Not any more. They continued down. The geography of the Pharos was uncanny. Felix's cogitator presented cartoliths that made no sense. According to his autosensors, they were walking on the ceiling, in defiance of gravity, heading down, when to all intents they looked to be going up, or passing through the same section several times without doubling back. The device's attempts to build a meaningful map came to nothing, and it bleeped in frustration. Felix shut the function down before the machine spirit took ill from the effort. The corridor branched more frequently, and the branchings became larger. Some of these must have been airtight, for they yielded pockets of ancient air that had kept out the ferrocrete. The tunnel became steeper and narrower, treacherous to ceramite boots, and gave no purchase to either their grips or to maglocking. Felix saw traces of metal in the ferrocrete. When he pointed these out to Call, the Archmagos paused, drew back his stolen excavators, and pulsed out fresh instructions. When the scarabs burrowed onwards, they left behind ancient walkways and steps cast from plasteel.
These are of Imperial make, said Felix,
taking in the opus machina stamped into the metal.
They are the product of the old Mechanicum, left here 10,000 years ago, said Call. We are not the first of our species to come this way.
Evidently, the mountain had been active even then, for the Imperial artifacts were half-absorbed into the green-black stone of the tunnels. The scarabs seemed to find these additions especially abhorrent, and Call needed to repeatedly divert them away from the fastenings holding the walkways to the alien stone. They passed an open tunnel that corkscrewed around on itself. A walkway followed the curve, warped and buckled, and half-drowned in living rock.
There was a map in the Library of Ptolemy, said Call. It is useless now. As you can see, the Pharos is not bound to one shape.
An hour later, the tunnel opened up into a huge cavern. The ferrocrete there was restricted to one side of the space. The inner face rippled with partial absorption. A number of dead scarabs, Felix could think of them in no other way than living things, lay on the ground. Several of Call's hijacked swarm detached themselves to tend to their inactive fellows. They darted over the broken machines, their silver surfaces glinting. In a few seconds, repairs were effected. Reactivated scarabs rose from their resting place and resumed work, abandoned who knew how many centuries before.
There is a large amount of ferrocrete to remove here, said Call. I must give the Xenos drones my full attention. You may rest, if you wish.
Felix's men would do no such thing, but spread out through the cavern. Suit lights bounced off the glossy black rock without penetrating it, although they could see deep within to where luminous shapes moved. Many tunnels opened off the cavern, worming their way to parts unknown. They entered through every surface of the cave and varied enormously in size, from microscopic to several big enough to accommodate a land raider. Felix looked into the stone. Ghost lights congregated where he watched, pulling his attention closer. Under his gaze, the lights coalesced, becoming shapes that he almost recognized. He reached out a hand. The shining rock rippled.
Tetrarch!
Commonus's vox snapped Felix's attention away. His fist clenched. The lights were gone. The rock still. Commonus was advancing on an aperture 5 feet high, set in the side of the cave with a base at about waist height. Its oval encompassed blackness, and so it appeared a tunnel. But when Commonus's light shone through, it glanced off far walls. There was a second cavern on the far side.
I saw lights, he said.
He had his gun ready. Ixon and Dalus flanked Commonus. They approached the gap from the sides. Then Commonus flung himself in front of it. Light flashed from the other side.
There's someone there, Commonus shouted. Adeptus Astartes, hold fire!
Lights flashed in and out of the cave. Then Commonus's gun wavered. He peered forwards and stepped back, his aim renewed.
By the Emperor, he whispered.
Felix pushed forwards to stand by his sergeant. On the far side of the hole, he saw Commonus, Dalus, and Ixon staring back. The doppelgangers were inverted, standing on the ceiling. Past the tops of their heads, Felix saw another call working Xenos drones to clear Ferrocrete, and other space marines drawing near to look.
Stand down,
Commonus said to them. The other Commonus was doing the same, their guns pointed directly at each other. Felix saw his counterpart reach up a restraining hand as he did so himself.
It's us, Felix said. Don't shoot. It's a Xenos trick, snarled Commonus. I am ordering you to stand down, said Felix.
He looked to his men.
All of you.
Reluctantly, Commonus put up his gun. The other Commonus did so a fraction of a second later.
Astounding, said Dalus. What is it?
Come away, said Alpha Primus.
He joined them.
Do not look.
Is it an image? Said Dalus.
Is it a trick?
Felix noted then that there was no Alpha Primus on the far side. He peered around and saw there were more space marines in his stead, standing in guard around Call. They were all in grey armour and numbered 20 in total.
It is a dimensional mirror, said Alpha Primus. We see a representation of reality as it might have been had fate taken another course.
Three of the grey-armoured Primaris Marines left their master and approached. They seemed to be arguing. A fourth came, then a fifth, and around the fists and heads of these last two, nimbuses of psychic power ignited. Felix saw other differences. There was no Ixon in the image. Another warrior stood exactly where Ixon was, and his heraldry was not of the Aquiloan Brotherhood. Gathine wore a normal Battle Brothers war gear. Troncus lacked his Martian red and servo harness and wore apothecary's white, while Felix saw belatedly that the hand his other self rested on Commonus's pauldron was a shining augmetic.
Look away from it, said Alpha Primus.
I can feel agitation. Step back, and the vision will fade.
You know this because of Call, said Commonus, who turned away.
Primus nodded.
Call teaches me many things. He made me for these eventualities. He drew in a sharp, pained breath. Quickly, we peer through barriers not meant to be breached.
It is not the warp, said Gathine, fascinated.
It is not any place. It is a glimpse of different possibilities, said Primus. Other ways things might have been.
Is it real?
Primus shrugged.
Objectively, who can say? I feel thoughts from them, but it could be a projection of the machine designed to confound us. Ask Call. He might tell you, if he feels like it.
The psychic warriors were coming closer. The alternate Commonus was becoming angry and threw off his tetrarch's hand.
Do it. Turn away, now,
said Felix. We do not know if we can interact with them. It is safest to remain ignorant.
I'll not turn my back on someone holding a gun on me, said Ixon.
You will, brother, and you will do so now, said Commonus.
The entire party turned their backs, except Alpha Primus. Slowly, they walked away. Felix expected a bolt round between his shoulders at any moment.
Stop,
he said, when he had taken a score of steps.
Do not look back, said Alpha Primus.
I must,
said Felix. He turned back to look. For a second, he saw through the hole into a kaleidoscopic display of variant caves, whence a multitude of Felixes stared back. Alpha Primus's hands fell on him and turned him around.
That is enough, Tetrarch.
Some minutes later, when Felix looked again, the tunnel mouth had gone. Smooth rock covered it over so flawlessly he doubted the aperture had ever been there. They stayed close to Call while he worked after that. Ferrocrete fell away in glittering showers. The Archmagos directed the drones to fabricate more of their kind, and the work hastened. The rest of the energy they stored needed venting, and the cavern sparkled with the reflected light of discharge as from energy the drones made air. At length, Call stepped back, and the Xenos drones fell into a drifting flock overhead, shepherded by his servo skulls.
We're through,
he said, gesturing to smooth black walls and an open tunnel.
After you, Decimus.
The amount of ferrocrete the party encountered thereafter diminished. Call's suborned swarm of drones spent most of its time flying about him in ordered streams. Each patch of false stone they came across showed signs of having already been gnawed back by particle beams, melted away like snowdrifts dying in the warmth of spring. Likewise, there was less and less of the ancient walkway left, until there was none at all, and the space marines were forced to proceed slowly in case they slipped and fell into the darkness of the mountain. They came to a near-vertical drop that ran right across the width of the passage. On the far side, the passage continued. It was a distance a Primaris space marine could clear with a jump, but Call went to the edge of the chute, peered down, and said,
"We must go down. The secondary control stage is beneath us. Primary location beta, as my illustrious brethren called it."
The chute had been cleared by other hands, and no trace of the walkways remained, or else the chute was new, and there had never been any structures placed there by humans. Either way, it was impassable to the space marines, being utterly smooth and impossible to climb. Call managed it easily enough. He was big enough to brace himself against the sides of the chute, and had enough feet and hands that the stone slickness didn't matter. But the space marines could not climb like him. They had no measure of how deep the pit was. Armor could protect them only so much against a fall.
"I will go alone," said Call. "Primus will accompany me. We will return shortly."
He waved a hand. The drones flew off back up the passage and landed in neat ranks that stretched far back up the way they had come. Thousands of single green eyes dimmed into blackness.
"You will not go alone," said Felix. "I'm coming with you."
"If you insist, Decimus," said Call distractedly. "If you insist."
"My lord," began Commonus. "No, sergeant. Not this time. Wait here. If we do not return, you are to retreat to the extraction point at the northern landing pad. Is that clear?" "Tetrarch, it is an order, Commonus. Follow it."
Call gave a wave and clanked away down the drop, where he vanished quickly into the inky black.
"Ixon," Felix said, "bring me ropes."
"Not necessary," said Alpha Primus.
He stepped forwards and raised a hand. Blue light blazed around his fist, and he lifted up from the floor and floated forwards. When Primus was over the drop, he raised his other hand, and Felix rose up upon a second cushion of psychic force.
"How do you manage these feats?"
Gathine called to him. "Can you sustain levitation all the way down?"
"I can," said Primus. "The black stone pains my soul. Does it not hurt you?"
the epistolary said, as Primus sank down the shaft.
"It hurts me," said Primus, "but I am used to pain. Everything hurts, all of the time."
Felix followed him down the shaft. Beneath his feet, the lights of Call's augmetics glanced from polished stone, but he could not see the Archmagos himself. A lip of black rose past his face, and he sank into blackness as thick as oil. Primus grunted with effort as they sat down. If the ferrocrete poured down the shafts in ancient times had got that far, there was no sign of it any longer. They emerged at a nexus where several tunnels came together. Call was waiting for them there. The passageway he pointed out for them to follow was tall and narrow, a slot rather than a tube. A servo skull drifted out, its reconnaissance completed.
"It is this way, I am sure of it," he said. "All has changed since the old maps were made, and according to the chronicles, the tunnels were inconsistent anyway.
But this slot is the same as the one described within the tomes of the Library of Ptolemy.
His pale face, lit blue by his atmospheric energy mask, smiled. Felix thought there was little chance that Call could fit through the gap, but the giant tech priest contorted himself, various portions flattening out or retracting, until he was of a good shape, and he slid into the slot like a sword into a scabbard. The tunnel curved around inwards, and he disappeared from sight again.
"You first," said Alpha Primus miserably, holding out his hand. "I will guard the rear."
Felix prepared his Boltstorm gauntlet.
"Weapons are not necessary here," said Primus.
Felix held his fist out all the same when he headed into the spiral. Call found primary location beta as intriguing as the books had suggested. It was tall, divided into two bell-shaped chambers set neck to neck so that it resembled an hourglass. The top was graced with one of the Pharos's many tunnels that wound off through stone and time and space. It had a sculpted, purposeful beauty that moved Call, all the more so since he was beginning to understand why it was that shape, why the stone shone so, why the wall came in a few hundredths of an inch just so by the entrance. He was on the cusp of discovery, and it excited him deeply. Expectant silence filled the chamber, as surely as water would a pitcher. Decimus Felix came edging into the bell chamber, then Alpha Primus. They noticed the import of the moment. Alpha Primus tried so hard to be stoic at all times, but this time failed. His miserabilism was too pronounced. He wallowed in sorrow, that one. If Call had the capacity to make another Alpha Primus, he would start over and tweak the genes for joy. Regrettably, that was impossible. Primus was and would remain unique. Even so, he looked around the chamber in wonder. Felix, on the other hand, was far more human in his humours. There was a childish defiance in Felix, a desperate need to prove himself worthy of the authority the Primarch had bestowed upon him. Felix was a favourite, of course. He brought out paternal instincts in him he never knew he had. The interface was going to be more difficult with them present, but life with an audience was always better, especially when such great deeds were about to be done.
"Decimus, stand over there."
Call made his way to the centre of the chamber. He pulsed invisible commands to his attendant flock of skulls, and they filed out in orderly fashion, one by one.
"The forces that are to be unleashed in here might damage my devices," he said. "I can't have that."
Mechadendrites rattled back into housings. His guns deactivated and pulled in closer to his body.
"Take my axe, please, Primus," he said,
holding out the massive cock-toothed weapon he bore. Primus took the haft.
"Go stand by Decimus, right there." "Yes," said Call.
He hunkered down a little as his legs pulled in. He made a show of bracing himself, but he really did need to do it.
"What I am about to attempt has never been done before," he said, portentously, indulging himself. "I have the means in here."
He tapped his head.
"To my knowledge, no Imperial servant has successfully joined with a Necron network to the extent that I am about to. Not once, ever," he said, emphatically. "Do not leave the side of the room. Do not touch me. Do not touch the walls."
In his tightly packed cranium, augmetics came alive. He felt the alien heat of the Blackstone bead in his head.
"No matter what happens."
"Very well."
Green lights flickered in the rock. Random at first, they drew together and sketched predictable circuit-like patterns.
"Get on with it, Call," said Felix. "You do know how to spoil a dramatic moment, Decimus," said Call.
He placed his primary hands palm to palm. The lights ran quicker in the stone. The Pharos sang.
"Now I begin," he said.
He plunged headlong into the Xenos infosphere, whereupon some potent force slammed into his machine-laced soul. It hurt to an almost intolerable degree.
Chapter 19. A Refusable Offer.
"Insect," said the voice of the mountain. "I bring most humble greetings," said Call. "I'm so very pleased to make your acquaintance. I am Belit, insignificant, but bold. You come to us now, out of your cage of metal and flesh.
You show yourself, light to light. Why?
Belisarius Call was alone in the dark, his body lit only by the light of his augmetics. This was not a physical space. His body was a machine projection, a form of imagination shared.
Unauthorized Memcore access.
Call enacted a dozen sub-processors to guard his mind. The probing presence withdrew.
Interesting, the voice said. Primitive, but well protected. Let us try another way.
The force gripped Call and pulled his limbs outwards, leaving him like an insect pinned to a board. Call screamed. This time the being breached his outer data walls and slipped into the upper layers of his soul. The laws of time and space stretched and bent. Call had the impression of an immense data probe riffling through his past.
Not your original form. Not your original being.
Again, Call screamed. The pain was a phantom, but felt all too real. Every one of his augmentations was carefully ripped away and pulled out for display. The Pharos sought to model him and turn back his existence through time to see what he had been before. It was all illusory, but it still hurt.
Nerve impulse, organic, bioelectrical, overlaid mechanical and electronic enhancements, but evolved from...
The thing paused.
You are one of their things, ultimately.
Another pause.
You do not know this. You are ignorant of your genesis. A debased thing of a debased age.
Oh, great one, Call panted. Hearken to me. I bring offers of an alliance between...
Nerve impulses detected in material form of subject. Purpose of impulse, production of vibrations in gas medium. Result, it talks, said the voice. It will cease talking.
Pain flooded Call's being, tormenting him down to the lowest subatomic particle and beyond. He yelped.
No need for that!
Still it talks. Cease!
The pain increased.
I have a proposal to bring to you, said Call. Show yourself. Let me speak with you face to face.
Face, queried the being. Face. Frontal expressive area to fore of upper body, often attached to endoskeletal box housing the organ of material-immaterial interface, it said with finality. Face. Face to face. A curious expression. Implication of personal contact. You have no face, only the facsimile of one. And in your corporeal state, the face you have is not your own.
The voice was pleased with itself.
We have no face. Light needs no face. Let us see what face was yours once.
The most deeply rooted of Call's implants were teased from their housings. Call shrieked as metal separated from bone. He blinked in surprise as flesh long ago purged crept across his features. By now, his immediate vicinity was crowded with floating components.
Time is nothing to us, the voice pompously declaimed. You are a thing of time.
It paused. Call felt it scrabble at his consciousness. So far, the deeper parts of his being remained inviolate. This annoyed the being.
Insect, it said petulantly.
You wish to understand me, said Call.
We wish to vivisect you, said the thing. There is nothing worth understanding in you, but we will pull you apart all the same to see how you work. We must understand this new age.
There's no need for that. We are kindred spirits, you and I.
Call gasped somehow. Bits of his thoracic extension were drifting away in the dark, where they disassembled themselves into their constituent components and floated in exploded diagrammatical form. It was very neat, if rather disturbing.
We are not like you, said the voice. We are a god. You are nothing.
Immobile, racked with pain, Call still laughed. The thing's annoyance grew.
God's a flexible term in my experience. There is one God, the machine God, and you are not he.
It was the thing's turn to laugh. Its voice broke into a dozen mocking voices, booming from unseen horizons and overwhelming Call's mind. The thing redoubled its efforts to penetrate Call's defences and mine his soul for information. It forced itself a little deeper. Call groaned.
These are the gods of your time. God of machines. Gods of chaos. God of... men. Men.
It paused, evaluating the word.
There is weakness in this area. You are a man. You are weak. Your species is weak, far removed from the original plan of our enemy. These are not gods you worship, this machine god, these entities in the warp, this emperor. We will explain. The first is a lie. The second are emergent consciousnesses caused by etheric disturbance. The third is a weapon.
It paused at this.
There is war. The rift. A rift has opened. The purity of reality is polluted. The war continues. Our war. You fight it, but you are weak. You are echoes. Echoes of might. Blots on purity. Glory has left this galaxy. Actually, I can be strong, if needed, said Call. If we talk, you and I, you shall see. I have much to offer. See how I continue my efforts to charm you while you torment me.
Searing pain coursed through him. He howled, then smiled.
You're not going to shut me up. Listen to me.
The thing was silent.
Perhaps, it said.
I can help you.
Perhaps.
We have much to teach each other.
That is definitely not so. You can never learn what we know, and you have nothing to teach us.
You are wrong.
Instead, you will free us.
It paused.
You have heard that before. We see it in the patterns of your mind.
Call said nothing.
You have heard that before from one of your so-called gods,
the voice insisted. Call got the sense of something settling back to regard him from a greater distance. The action of a being desiring to understand the whole of a complex mechanism by changing perspective.
This is a strange era. We have much to learn. We shall adjust your temporal resonance again, so that you may show us more.
Wait,
said Call. But by then, he was back in the past. Circa 10,000 years ago. Call and Friedrich spent an uncomfortable month locked in their quarters on the Altrix's ship. The craft was fast and the warp smooth, but Terra was a long way from Riser. Time dragged. They became fractious, and Call, especially, disgraced himself with his pettish behaviour. They were allowed to socialise at first, but eventually became sick of each other, so spent much of the voyage apart at opposite ends of their shared quarters, bickering every time they spoke. In a moment of unusual thoughtfulness, the Altrix allowed them onto the observation deck when the ship passed the holy orb of Mars. A guard came for them and led them up through the ship. They sniped and argued like rival dowagers until they came to the gallery windows, where the sight of the great evils done to Mars silenced them. They gaped. Friedrich gripped Call's arm. They sailed near Mars, not far off the higher anchorages. The world was crowded by debris clouds of stupendous scale, their components ranging in size from substantial parts of battlecruisers to flecks of paint that glittered in the sun like morning frost, misting the view. But though thick, the clouds could not conceal all that had happened to Call and Friedrich's world. Giant black scars cut across the red deserts. Whole cities had been razed. New and awful craters gouged the surface, where once temple forges and industrial complexes had lifted their spires in praise of the machine god.
Belisarius, It's gone. My home. It's gone.
Friedrich raised a shaking hand and pointed to where a deep fissure marked the location of Mundus Planus Fabricatory Conurb. All over Mars, cities had been wiped away. Impact patterns spread their dark splashes over the ground. The fabled ring of iron, which circled the equator, had suffered as much as the mother world. Sections were missing, the material broken off and floating among the wrecks huddling around the red world. Mars's polluted skies twinkled with re-entry tracks and the flash of laser discharge shooting down the largest pieces of debris.
"This is Mars," said the Altrix.
She stood with her hands clasped behind her, back straight, like an officer delivering a report to her general.
"This is your home. You will note the large amounts of damage done to the world by the Adeptus Mechanicus Reclamation Force. I understand that fighting is still going on in the deeper hives. The traitors are tenacious."
"All the knowledge, all those people," said Friedrich quietly.
He stifled a sob.
"I assume you are making some kind of point here," said Kuhl grimly.
The Altrix nodded once.
"I am making a point. I want you to see how much has been lost. I want you to remember what you see here when the director makes his offer. Knowledge is precious. Almost as much wisdom as blood was spilled in the war. We must work together to preserve what remains."
She looked at them and curled her lip.
"No matter how distasteful that might be."
She unclasped her hands.
"I shall leave you here to observe the results of man's folly, and think upon what I have said. My men will take you back to your quarters. We arrive at Terra in 3 days.
She walked by them, pausing as she passed.
"This will soon be over," she said.
It was the only kindly thing Call ever heard her say. Terra greeted them with the cold indifference of a neglectful mother. The worn-out birthplace of humanity had little affection for its trillions of children before Horus's great betrayal. In the aftermath of war, it had none left at all. For Call and Friedrich, this coldness was to be expected, and they returned it. Their loyalties lay with Mars. Terra was in worse condition even than the Red Planet. Wounded, grey and black, all traces of the Emperor's efforts at rejuvenation wiped clean. Its cities were smouldering piles, and its people, where they survived, were lost in shock. Its mighty court of orbital plates was missing. Old Earth was naked, dead, diminished, a corpse world crawling with vermin. They rode their shuttle down in grim silence. Altrix Herminia caught Kor's eye and raised a questioning eyebrow at him. He turned away. They arrived at the half-ruined Lion's Gate spaceport to find a world in mourning, and not solely for the loss of the Emperor. There was not one person untouched by the war. Everyone, from legionary to peon, had lost someone. Black adorned everything. Security was tight, but the Altrix had clearance of the highest sort. Her warriors were ushered through the crowds of troopers manning the checkpoints. No questions were asked regarding her guests. They had to drive through what was left of the Imperial Palace. Most of the transit system was wrecked. Only the most important roads were clear. They wound a circuitous route through a broken wasteland of metal and rubble, haunted by grey survivors. Legionaries patrolled the streets in incongruously bright armour. They were all laden with honours that told of heroic actions in the defence. Even such minor celebration of victory seemed obscene. There were precious few of these transhumans. The legions were shattered, their survivors gone in pursuit of the fleeing enemy. Their transport was military, all-terrain, a truck held high over the ground on 8 fat tyres. Nothing less than that could have traversed the ruins. They passed long lines of emaciated people waiting for rations being distributed from a burned-out hab block. Though barely more than a shell, it was in far better shape than its neighbouring buildings, which were reduced to cones of rubble scores of yards high. Through armoured windows, Kuhl peered at diseased faces. He knew enough of human physiology to see that most of the people would not last out the winter.
"Such a waste," said Kuhl. "So much death."
"The wages of treachery are always collected by the undeserving," said the Altrix. "You see, now you understand what Director Sedain understands, that humanity needs to be saved from its victory. Only knowledge can do that."
Kuhl looked at her from under his cowl. He was in a foul temper and didn't care to hide it.
You know, you will not hear much disagreement from me on that account. So why the need for the men with the guns?
Mortal minds are fickle. Individual choice cannot be allowed to stand in the way of destiny.
Charming. What manner of education produced a woman like you? Cole said.
A truthful one, she replied.
The transport turned a corner onto one of the palace's gargantuan processional ways. Its great width was narrowed to a ravine by falls of debris from downed hives. In the distance, the jagged butts of the broken palace walls bit at the horizon. Night was coming. Days were short and cold. There was so much material in the atmosphere, it would take 1,000 years for the sun to shine cleanly again. Sol tracked across the grey heavens, a woeful smear, as miserable in colour and movement as every other Sol on Terra. There were a few places where luxury hid. There were buildings intact, and some entire spires, the surprise survivals that exist in any war, and, as in any war, such places were monopolised by the rich. Herminia took Call and Friedish to a starscraper in Outer Griffonia, not far from the remains of the Celentine Wall. The building stood amid a multi-level wasteland formed from the bones of its brothers and sisters. Though still erect, the scraper's lower levels were a honeycomb of blasted-out walls and gaping artificial caves. The effects of war continued all the way up its considerable height to the top, where wounds in its silvery skin, caused by voidship lance fire, looked like the claw marks of gargantuan beasts. But there was life within. The inside was full of servitors shoring up the structure. They laboured, each absorbed in their own limited tasks, but together they produced work of stunning complexity and at speed.
"Terra will rise again," said Friedish. "I hope the same is happening on Mars."
"Both worlds survive," said Herminia, blackly. "They will never be the same again." They entered a lifter with Herminia's guards at their back. It rose rapidly. Atmospheric controls were malfunctioning, and their ears popped several times before the lifter began its long deceleration. They disembarked on a high floor, which appeared whole but whose corridors played host to the antics of freezing Himalayan winds. Atmospheric cyclers groaned in their attempts to maintain a breathable pressure. Already high up on the mountains, the altitude the building added thinned the air to nothing, and both Call and Friedish panted plumes of ice crystals. Herminia took no consideration of their difficulties, and they were hustled down the corridors by her guards. Neither she nor they suffered from the rarefied atmosphere, and they arrived in perfect formation, helms and weapons gleaming amid the dereliction, while Call and Friedish struggled to breathe. They came to a grand door swathed with the limp plastic sheeting of an auxiliary airlock. The airlock inflated like a balloon until it stood rigid, enabling the door to open. Call and Friedish were shoved inside, where they took grateful gulps of warmed, thicker air. Once inside, they got a good look at the room door. It was bronze, 10 feet high. The etched decoration of civilians and space marines leading humanity to a better future seemed painfully quaint. A suite of rooms welcomed them, the principal of which was huge and opulent. There was a window overlooking the battered city, but it had been darkened to near total opacity, shutting out Terra's pain. Rich carpets ran to walls of pleasingly sinuous shape. Antiques furnished the rooms. Artifacts and pieces of art from Terra's long past stood in downlit alcoves. It was designed perfectly, a calming space, but this echo of Imperium's lost promise had not escaped the ruin entirely. A thin layer of fine dust lay on everything, despite the best efforts of the ventilation system to keep it out. At least in there, the pressure was more bearable, and the tech priest's breathing settled. There was a single man in the room. Two of Herminia's soldiers stayed behind to stand sentry. The rest exited to an antechamber, leaving the sum of the occupants at 6. It seemed too small a number to fill the room. The carpeted floor hid dangerous gulfs. "Belisarius Call, Friedish Adam Silip Kvo, I present you to Director Ezekiel Sedain, technologist and scientist of the Emperor's Inner Research Cadres, Biotechnical Division."
Sedain took the delivery of his title with studied diffidence and turned to a table covered in dull gold leaf, where stood a selection of decanters and several expensive-looking glasses.
"Do you drink, Call? Kvo?"
he said. Alcohol, I mean. He addressed the bottles rather than his guests.
I'm not as pedantic as some of my colleagues, said Call. I don't deny myself the pleasures of flesh, either. They are given to us by the machine god to enjoy.
Your religion is so charming, said Sedain.
Yes, I drink, said Call frostily.
Sedain smiled, again at the bottles and not at the men.
Then allow me to select you something.
He spent a moment doing so, then picked a tall fluted vessel and poured purple liquor from it into three glasses. He took them all up in one large hand and presented one each to Friedisch and Call.
Plum brandy.
Sedain looked at them gravely, then smiled. He had grey, intense eyes and the thin skin of someone living on mortgaged time.
They have made this for thousands of years around the Mediterranean desert. I'm rather partial to it. I hope you enjoy it.
Call took the glass. Friedrich's hand shook as he accepted his. Sedain was tall and thin. Call would have suspected off-world heritage, a life in low-G habitats, but Sedain wore no supplementary braces on his limbs to help him move under Terra's pull. Although he did lean for support on her glossy cane, that seemed more because of his age. He had long black hair and features that had many of the ingredients of handsomeness, but which did not come together to provide it. Clothes of simple cut but expensive make clad him in black and greys.
I shall try not to be trite nor mysterious, but straightforward, said Sedain. I know you have training in the arts biologica, Call. I don't know about you, adept. Acolytum Friedisch Adam Silip Quo, said Friedisch, annoyed his name had already been forgotten. Acolytum? I was days away from securing my first ranking when the war came to Trisolian, said Friedisch. You will find me competent in several fields, notably...
Thank you, said Sedain,
silencing him with a raised hand.
As I was saying, it will be apparent to you that I am old, and that I have but a little time to live. I am sorry to interrupt you, Acolytum, but time is short. Please be seated.
He gestured to a nest of overpadded chairs.
I will tell you what you must know, and make the offer the Altrix here has no doubt intimated I will.
They sat. Sedain moved with grace, but stiffness was setting in.
Ardanian vitality, said Call.
You know your rejuvenates,
Sedain nodded.
Stolen life, I regret to say.
Illegal, said Call.
He sipped his drink, sweet and heady with a scent from the past. In it were trapped long summers and gentle lands gone into dust.
Then you know me a little already, said Sedain. I did not take it lightly, and I did not take it for myself.
No? You wish to give the Ardanians a sense of purpose, said Call.
Droll,
said Sedain. His grey eyes hardened.
I heard that about you, that you undermine others by making light of what is important to them, while pompously declaiming your own worth.
Call shrugged.
I strive for perfection in the eyes of the machine god. I have yet to attain it. I do better than most, though.
Sedain shook his head.
You see, Altrix, this is the poor standard of inquiring minds in this benighted age. Machine god, he snorted. But I'm sure we agree on some things, Call. Tell me, what is the most valuable thing in the universe?
Knowledge, said Call and Friedisch simultaneously.
Exactly,
said Sedain.
It was for knowledge's sake that I prolonged my life in so barbaric a way. Do you think I have no empathy for the sentient beings that died so that I could live?
No.
Similarly, it is for the sake of the same knowledge I had you brought here.
He cradled his drink in long, venous fingers.
I am one of the fortunate few who worked with the Emperor himself. There are not many of us left now. Old age took many of us. The war, many more. Soon there will be one less. I am dying.
Call sipped his drink again. Friedisch peered at his, suspiciously.
I know you must have interest in the biological work of the Emperor. You were a student of Diocomedes, yes?
Call nodded.
He was a colleague of mine, a long time ago.
Sedain attempted a winning smile.
He had cosmetically altered teeth, very straight, and horribly, unnaturally white. They looked bizarre in his chem-smoothed face, as if he were a plastic recreation of a man.
"He was gifted, if deluded, like all your creed. That was before I worked on the creation of the Legiones Astartes. I was the director of the Carapace Project."
False modesty wrapped his words, tight as apple skin.
"Do you know that the Black Carapace was an unusual part of the Astartes program?" Sedain said. "It is the final stage implant, and unlike some of the other organs that can, if necessary, be grown internally from seed germs, the carapace must be grafted in substantial pieces. Once in place, it encourages the human body to adopt it as its own, and it spreads. It is an engineered..."